This is The Rock. Bill asks, welcome to Newsmakers. Every day is International Women's Day. And yes, women have made great contributions to the game of baseball. Today, we talk about women in baseball. On the show, we have Hall of Famer Claire Smith, Orioles head groundskeeper Nicole McFadden, A's beat writer Susan Slusser, and MLB.com's Richard Justice. Enjoy the podcast. Every day is International Women's Day, and they've done a lot of great work in the United States. And I have a great guest. She's a Hall of Famer, in fact. She's the winner of the Spink Award. She's the first woman to win it. Her name is Claire Smith. And Claire, thank you so much for being with me.
Thank you, Bill.
Claire, has it hit you yet that you are a Spink Award winner and you're the first in baseball to win that award?
Oh, it's hit me from the moment it was announced in December, and it's really made me reflect on so many aspects. Just sitting here in Kansas City today, waiting for a program to kick off at the Negro Leagues Museum tomorrow about black women in sports, and I'm so grateful to be invited to participate in that, and it got me thinking about, you know, our role in sports and our role in not only covering baseball, chronicling the sport, and our role in journalism, but the overall role in baseball, sports, and in this country. So I thought back to the first woman to go into Cooperstown, who is a woman of color, and Effa Manley. So I am doing my best to correct people when I'm identified as the first woman to go into Cooperstown. I certainly am not. That was Effa Manley, the owner of the Newark Eagles, Negro League team, and she co-owned it with her husband. And she, like I, was born in Philadelphia. I'm very proud of her. And she was inducted in 2006. So I'm going to correct that record as often as possible. She was a real, real pioneer. And I'm just humbled to be in a wing with the writers, great, great writers, Spink Award winners. I'm going to go there and try to honor their memories and their great works. But to be in the same building with Mrs. Manley is just going to be amazing, not to mention the hundreds of players and that I've covered, the Hall of Famers. The reason for being is that museum is awesome, as is this museum that I'm going to visit tomorrow that honors the other major league that existed up to 1957 or so, and gave the major leagues such great players as Jackie and Satchel Paige and Hank Aaron, Willie Mays. So, yeah, I've been thinking a lot. There are a lot of tangents. I tend to speak to them, so I apologize, and I will stop and let you ask your next question.
No problem. Yeah. No problem. Who inspired you to become a sports writer? Who were your mentors?
My mentors being Claude Lewis at the Philadelphia Bulletin, Elmer Smith, Chuck Newman. I'm mentioning professors that I had at Temple University. Jacqueline Steck, who was my first journalism professor. I had no idea that I wanted to be a journalist until I walked into Jacqueline's class. I thought that I would go back to school after meandering through my mid-20s. Not knowing what I wanted to do, my dad said, "What are you doing? What do you want to do?" And I said, "Well, I want to work in baseball. I love baseball. I want to own a baseball team. I want to do something with baseball." And he said, "Well, go back to school." And so I went back to with the idea of going into public relations inside baseball. To get a degree at Temple University, you had to take one journalism course to get a public relations degree. And I registered for that class. The professor was Jacqueline Steck, and I was hooked from day one.
Wow.
She just showed me the magic of journalism, and I turned on a dime, as the cliche goes. I decided I wanted to be a reporter and cover baseball instead of working in baseball. I wanted to write my own ideas, not put out public relations releases.
Gotcha.
And so she's probably the most inspirational person in my life when it comes to journalism. And then there are the great writers that I have followed and learned from, sat beside in press box after press box after press box. They're the women that have mentored me, starting with Jane Gross at the New York Times. I would have been so lost in New York City if it weren't for Jane. And Jane was probably 5 foot tall and 80 pounds and probably the strongest person I ever saw, because she bore the brunt of some of the most brutal hazing that I'd ever seen. It was certainly easier for players to go after Jane than it was for them to go after me. My skin color was a suit of armor. Mm-hmm. I truly believe that being black protected me from some of the ridiculous nonsense that Jane endured, because I believe there was an innate fear in those players of being called racist.
Wow.
And back in the day, in the 80s, clubhouses were pretty well integrated with black players. Wow. And I think that players knew that there could be a bigger issue than just sexism charges. So I watched Jane put up with a lot of garbage.
So it wasn't that tough for you when you first entered the baseball world as a journalist?
You know what? I have to say, I had one really rotten, awful, gut-wrenching incident in 35 years.
Mm-hmm.
One.
Mm-hmm.
I have friends, female friends, who had terrible seasons year after year after year after year.
Wow.
They endured miseries that I, to this day, don't understand how they put up with it. And I think that has a lot to do with why I'm still doing this after 35 years, and why so many of my friends just said, you know, enough, and lasted for 5, 10, 15 years.
Wow.
And just said there are better things to do in life than to put up with this. It's one thing to officially mandate that clubhouses are open. It's another thing to try to use a can opener and open people's minds and hearts, and
right,
tell them to do the right thing, try to convince them to do the right thing.
Right.
New York was a very sophisticated, open-minded place to grow up in, and Jane preceded me by years, and she bore the brunt of it. By the time I got there in 82, the Yankees and Mets were policing their clubhouses thoroughly. There was an influx of, I think, college-educated players and players who very proudly policed their own clubhouses, and made it a lot easier for the women who were coming in greater numbers into their realm, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very lucky. Location, location, location. The women out in the outer reaches, if you were, west of the Mississippi, in towns where they'd be very lonely, the only female reporters for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of miles, they had difficult times.
Right.
Their only solace was long conversations on the phone, talking really to the only other person at times who truly understood what you were going through.
Right. You know, you are best remembered for covering the Yankees. And what was that like?
It was, I think Greg Nettles described it best when he said that he always wanted to play for the Yankees and run away and join the circus, and he got to do both.
Right.
You compare notes with beat reporters who covered sane, normal teams, and they just laughed incredulously at what you were going through. The Steinbrenner era was unlike anything I think anybody ever seen. Just to give you an idea, Bill, you covered the Nationals. My first year was 82, and I walked in around May, June.
Mm-hmm.
The Yankees of 82 had three managers, six pitching coaches, and 54 players.
Wow.
And then 83, Billy Martin came back. 84, Yogi Berra was the manager, beloved, and he had been promised by George Steinbrenner that George would give Yogi the full season, and I believe it was the 16th game, George fired Yogi. It was that kind of roller coaster craziness that you just had to brace for every single day. It was an era that preceded cell phones and
right.
texting, emails, so you were always kind of hostage in your room, your hotel rooms, and at home, waiting for the phone calls either from public relations directors or even George,
wow.
who just feasted on talking to the press as either a source or just putting out media blast quotes going after his players, managers, coaches.
Wow.
It was 24/7 helter-skelter craziness.
Right. Wow. Now tell the folks what you do with ESPN. You now work for them, and tell me what you do.
I am a coordinating news editor. It's a part of the news co-op, if you will, that works with shows and remote broadcast units. My specialty, hard as it is to believe, is baseball. So I work with the news gathering when it comes to baseball. I work with Baseball Tonight, and I work with all things concerning live broadcasts, whether that's Baseball Tonight at the World Series or the three live games that we do. I work with any sports center on-site programming, such as when a sports center joined with the broadcast of the game from Cuba, or if SportsCenter goes on site to the World Series. If there is a special event, we do a lot of special events connected to our baseball broadcasts. I'll give you an example. We had a game at Fort Bragg last year, So that's the first game that was ever broadcast from military base. So my duties, to use a military word, is to get the on-camera crew ready, give them as much information as it relates to baseball's relationship with the military, its history regarding the military, who served, who was a distinguished member of the military, what players might have actually even been stationed at Fort Bragg, what Fort Bragg's vaunted history is, that sort of thing. Also, breaking news. I'm responsible for helping our on-air talent look smart. As I was once told by the coordinating editor, make sure we do our due diligence, help our on-air talent deal with what might come their way during the first through ninth inning of a game. An example, again, is on a Sunday night in Philadelphia, we had to deal with the death of Bin Laden, and we weaved that into our game with the help of Bristol and ABC, which is a partner of ESPN. And I was in the truck with our coordinating producer, and also the head of ESPN was in the truck that night. He had decided to visit us, and the three of us were in constant contact with ESPN's news desk back in Bristol, and we basically helped run the operation and helped keep Dan Shulman, Bobby Valentine, and Oral Hershiser on point, and help them break the news to our audience as to what was going on, why the Phillies fans and Mets fans were chanting USA, USA. And ESPN became part of the story because it was televising from what turned out to be the largest gathering of Americans, if you will, that night that Bin Laden died.
Right.
So it's my job to monitor the news, not just baseball transactions, but monitor all news during a game, during the time that we're on the air live, to make sure we know what's going on in baseball and the greater world, the real world, if you will, and to help our on-air talent deal with it smartly, or in some cases, just say we don't have to deal with that. It doesn't rise to the level that ESPN sets in terms of standards, and we can ignore that. I'm to use news judgment and to coordinate with Bristol and make sure that we're not hanging ourselves up to dry, if you will.
Gotcha.
Setting ourselves up to be battered because we made a bad decision.
Claire Smith, congratulations, and thank you so much for being on the show.
Hey, Bill, thank you. I can't wait to see you down the road somewhere, and best of luck, and congratulations on this wonderful podcast.
You want to know why Orioles Park has a beautiful field? It's beautiful because of the ground crew they have, and it's led by Nicole McFadden. She's the head groundskeeper at Oriole Park. And Nicole, thank you so much for being with me.
Thanks.
Nicole, first of all, this is your 11th year as the Orioles groundskeeper, and you know, tell me how much fun you're having doing the job.
Oh, I love this job. I love coming to the ballpark every day. You know, it's not just about the aesthetics and what we do out there on the field to make it look great for our fans and for our ownership and, you know, for everybody playing on the field. It's really about the science behind how to maintain that field that really drives me to do what I do every day.
Tell me the key to keeping it, you know, beautiful.
Well, the key really is just staying off of it as much as possible, letting the grass rest, get a little bit of energy when the team's away and when there's no other events on the field. A good fertilizer program, a good chemical program, that's not only safe for the environment but beneficial for the turf grass that we grow here.
Wow. Now, tell me, how much do you rely on the weather report?
I rely 100% on a weather report every single day. You know, the weather here in Baltimore is wacky. You know, we can have, like, for instance, 70 degrees yesterday and then snowing today. During the season, we can have cold weather, and then the next day it'd be 90 degrees. So weather reports are imperative for me to be able to maintain that field, the grass, the health of the plant, as best as possible for the team.
The one thing I notice is that when it rains or snows, your crew is on that tarp ready to put it on. And tell me how that goes.
Yes. So pretty much all day long I'm watching the weather report, and if I see a storm that's brewing at least 5 or so miles out, that's when I update the umpire crew chief and, you know, just have my guys ready behind that tarp, ready to pull out onto the field if needed once the crew chief gives the okay.
Wow. I understand Buck Showalter and the players really love the job that you do, and it must make you and your crew feel good knowing that they think you're doing a great job. Could you talk about your relationship with Buck Showalter and the players?
Absolutely. I mean, this team, we're very family-oriented. So being out there every day in front of those guys, working with them, you know, accommodating the field to what, you know, they prefer is key to our job as grounds crew. You know, we like to keep behind the scenes, but when we get accolades from somebody like Buck Showalter or any athlete on that field, it really makes us feel like we're valued, that they know that we're doing a good job keeping the Camden Yards the way it is. Buck is a great person to be around and to talk to about baseball, and he's been in the game for so long. He has a lot of input for sure on how to maintain a major league field.
What about the players? You don't hear many complaints from them either.
No, absolutely not. You know, if there's an issue with the field, they'll come to us or approach us in a way that, you know, wants to be beneficial for the game. But most of it is just like, great job. The field played wonderful last night. Best field in baseball. You know, just a lot of compliments to the crew.
Now, Nicole, I understand when you started out, you worked in a golf course at first. Could you talk about how it all started for you and talk about that?
Yes. Well, I have my degree in agriculture, and going through school, I decided to try the path of golf course superintendent. You know, I was on the greens committee, or not the greens committee. I was a greenskeeper on the golf course, and just the mowing patterns and learning how to fertilize high-end facilities like that really intrigued me and kept me going. You know, I came home one day and my dad was watching the Atlanta Braves play against the Phillies, but in Atlanta, because at that time we only had the Veterans Stadium in Philadelphia, so right. That was not real grass. And I decided to call the head groundskeeper at Oriole Park after a short field trip that we took during school. I got his business card, and he asked me to come down and work 2 weeks later. So that's kind of how I got the transition from golf course to baseball. I love baseball. I understood how to maintain a high-end facility, and I wanted to do it at the professional baseball level.
Now, you know, Nicole, as you know, we don't see many women who are head groundskeepers. And for women who would like to be a grounds crew, be part of the grounds crew, what should they do to get in?
Well, you know, in school there were a lot of women in my field, agriculture, so I never thought it was any different, you know, coming into professional sports or golf course maintenance or anything like that. But any woman that is interested in science, interested in chemistry, interested in agronomy, I think that if you're not really wanting to go towards the agricultural side of it, you could kind of segue into the turf grass side of it. There's a ton of research out there, a lot of genetic testing. It's just a really fascinating industry to be a part of, and it just takes one person just exploring that option to be a good groundskeeper.
Nicole, I'd like to know, who were your influences, and who is that one person who said, yes, you can be a head groundskeeper?
Well, my influences, obviously my parents, they really encouraged me to do anything that I wanted to do in life and supported my decisions in the turf grass industry. But obviously it was the person who gave me a shot at this internship here at Oriole Park at Camden Yards that led me to my career, and that person was the head groundskeeper at the time, Al Capitas. Mm-hmm. And he was the one that said, you know, if you really want to make it to the big leagues, you have to prove yourself at the minor league level. And that's when I decided to take a step down from being an assistant groundskeeper here at Oriole Park and try my hand in the minor leagues as a double-A head groundskeeper.
Wow.
And they and actually, eventually got back.
They actually had a bobblehead of you, didn't they?
Yeah.
Wow. That's
funny. I don't like to talk about that too much. It's a little embarrassing, but... Well, definitely a fun time, definitely.
But it shows the hard work that you did, and you should be proud.
Thank you.
My final question, how good would it be to see the Orioles go all the way? And obviously it would mean a lot of work to fix the field, but, you know, how would it feel to see the Orioles go all the way?
Oh, my gosh. You know, like these past 5 years have been amazing, and to watch this team progress and make it as far as they do every season now, it's really fun. It would be an honor, an absolute honor to provide a field for, you know, the World Series, especially, you know, with our team playing on it. But I think that would be the greatest accomplishment that, you know, we work 14 hours a day, you know, for 100-some days a year to achieve. So that would be probably the best thing that could ever happen to me.
You guys work every day, 24 hours.
Well, not 24 hours, but when the team is in town, we're putting in 14-hour days, and then when the team is out of town, we put in at least 8 or 9 hour days, depending on how hot it is.
What about the off season?
There's no off season in baseball. you know, it's just January and February that is mostly inside work, and then we've been out on the field now for the past 3.5-4 weeks, so. Yeah. We're getting ready for opening day. So
yeah, the
season's short, and you just want to take time with your family and friends and enjoy.
The weather has been weird. That's the truth there.
Yes.
Well, listen, Nicole, thank you so much, and you should be proud, and people should follow you. You take care of yourself.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
You got it. My next guest is Susan Slusser. She's the beat writer for the San Francisco Chronicle. She covers the Oakland A's. And she's one of the best in the business. Susan, thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Susan, first of all, you heard some news about Sonny Gray. Could you tell us what's going on with him?
Well, Sonny is out for at least probably the first 2 to 3 weeks of the regular season with a lat strain. The A's have actually shut him down for 3 weeks from throwing. The good news, of course, is it's not his arm. It's a lat, but lat strains are notoriously tricky, a little bit like hamstrings where, you know, if you try to come back a little too soon, you can wind up injuring it actually more than you did the first time around. So I think they'll be cautious with him. He's frustrated because he was so really determined to turn things around after a rough year last year. But it's, you know, it's just a little setback, and it happened with 3 weeks left in the spring, so it won't cost him as much time during the regular season as it might have as it happened in June. So I think he's trying to look a little bit on the bright side, but still, he said it was shocking. He didn't think that there was even anything wrong with him.
Wow. Susan, I have you on the show because every day is International Women's Day, and you are the first woman to serve as the president of the WBBA. And what was that like? And that's a great honor.
Yeah, it's an organization that means a lot to me. I think people don't really, they know the BBWAA for the postseason awards and Hall of Fame voting and things like that. But what it really is and as an organization is it's a workplace, an industry sort of workplace organization. It's to ensure good working conditions and adequate access so we can do our job, so we can, you know, have enough time to talk to players, have the facilities with which to do it. And obviously for any baseball writer, those things really matter a lot. So it was my honor to serve as president, and I'm still very heavily involved with it. So I love the BBWAA.
Right. You are still on the board. Is that correct?
I'm not on the board, but I'm sort of a, you know, always around to help with anything they need, and I'm a chapter chair for the Bay Area.
Wow, that's great. I'd like to know, for people who don't know, who are your mentors growing up? Who influenced you to become a sports writer?
Well, I didn't really know him all that well, but Roger Angel was my idol, and as you may know, I helped get him finally into the Spink Award, which is what goes to the writers that who have plaques in the Hall of Fame. Technically, they don't go into the Hall of Fame, but they do win the Spink Award. He had been nominated once by the New York chapter, but they didn't get the paperwork in, so he was never voted on, and then they never got around to it again. So the various chapter, actually, we wound up nominating him at my behest, and of course, he did wind up going in. So that was a real highlight, I think, of my entire career, was to help things along with that, because it was so richly deserved.
Wow. How tough is it to cover the A's? The reason I'm asking is because there's always talk about relocation, and there's always news around that team. How tough is it to cover the A's?
News is great for any reporter. We love news. So, yeah, they're actually a fun team to cover, and very enjoyable in that, you know, we've got one of the most dynamic and innovative front offices in pro sports with Billy Beane and David Force. They keep things interesting. So I'm very lucky, really, to have spent 19 years covering the A's.
Do you cover, like, the analytics of the team? I mean, like, they're really into that, correct?
Well, you know, writing for a general newspaper audience, it's tough to do very much in terms of analytics. You know, they do want us to write for a, you know, a general sports audience. And I think there's a greater understanding among most baseball fans of some of the more accepted sabermetric numbers, but anything beyond, you know, WAR and some things like that, and it's probably not going to get through my copy editors.
Right, I understand. For women who would like to become sports writers, what advice would you give them, especially to work in the baseball field?
Well, I would give anybody of you know, any gender the same advice. You know, show up early and be the last one there, and volunteer for extra work, and whatever sport it is that you're interested in covering, you need to know every sport, because you can't go to any outlet organization, unless it's something like, you know, MLB.com, and expect that you're going to just cover one sport. So you really have to be familiar with everything. You need to know how to keep score. You need to know how to keep statistics. There's a lot more to it, I think, than people realize, especially when you're getting started in the business. And as anybody would say in any industry, if you're just starting out, listen to the people that are already in the jobs that you want, and don't act like you know it all. And, you know, make yourself really invaluable. Learn everybody's job, and if they need somebody to fill in and you're it, they might wind up hiring you.
To prove your point, you covered also the Orlando Magic in basketball. And what was that like to cover the Magic?
That was a blast. I covered the Magic the year they went to the finals with Shaquille O'Neal and Penny Hardaway. And it was such a fun team, really great to deal with. Orlando Sentinel was the only paper that was covering them full-time. So I kind of really got an up-close and personal look at, you know, at Horace Grant was there, a bunch of good talkers like Dennis Scott and Brian Shaw. So I love that year. I'm a Californian, so I was looking to get home, and I'm baseball for my sport, so I wanted to get back to doing baseball, but for having to cover something besides baseball, that was a pretty good year.
You you know, we've seen women win World Series titles like Joan Payson and Marge Schott. Will we ever see a woman as a GM? And what would you like to see baseball do regarding women?
I would think that you know, Kim Ng certainly is, her name has bounced around. It'll happen. Gene Afterman's the assistant GM of the Yankees. There are a lot of very qualified women moving their way up in sports ranks, so that's definitely something that will happen, I would imagine, within the next 5 to 10 years.
Well, listen, Susan, thank you so much for being on the show, and listen, you have a great year.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me.
You got it. Take care. Every day is International Women's Day, and we continue to talk about women in baseball. And my next guest knows a lot about women in baseball, and that's Richard Justice, one of the best writers for MLB.com. Richard, thank you so much for being with me.
I appreciate you having me, Bill.
Richard, over the years, we've seen women owners win World Series titles like Joan Payson, who won it with the Mets, Marge Schott, who won it with the Reds. And of those World Series titles, the 1969 Mets, to me, was, really the best one because they won it with their farm system, and they really upset the Orioles that year. Could you talk about, Joan Payson winning it with the Mets?
Yeah, and also it's sort of, it came out of nowhere. We didn't expect it. You know, we'd been so focused on the Cubs that summer.
Right.
And then here come the Mets, and the way they won it with that pitch and that pitch, it was one of those stories, whether you were a Mets fan or not, everybody remembers it, and everybody has a special place in its heart. Having lived in Baltimore for 16 years, it certainly has a special place in the hearts there, not particularly in a good way.
Yes. And it was shocking because, the Orioles, as you remember, they were a powerful team, and then Joan Payson's team, the Mets, just outpitched them. Basically, they won on their pitching, and that was amazing to watch.
Yeah, it was amazing to watch. And there, it's funny. I can't remember what I had for breakfast, but there are moments in that World Series, and that was the age when your teacher would let you watch it when they were playing day ball and all that. Everybody remembers the scene after, the way they just the celebration was so wild in New York City, the ticker tape parade and all that. Very cool, a very cool moment for the game.
And also, everyone remembers Marge Schott, but for different reasons, because of her dog and, racial problems. She did win a World Series in 1990. What do you remember about that?
I remember that it was these guys like Eric Davis that, even to this day, Bill, when I see Eric Davis, I just have such an affection for the way those guys went about their business, the job that Lou Piniella did, and what they did was, it wasn't what the Mets did, not exactly, but the Oakland A's had won the previous year, and the Oakland A's were very, very heavy favorites. Now, when you look back on it, you say, wait, they had Larkin, they had Sabo, they had Billy Hatcher, they had Paul O'Neill. They had a lot of players. And the way that bullpen was managed behind Jose Rio and those guys was pretty darn good. And that was as good as it gets. That sort of made us take a look at Lou Piniella and say, wait, this guy is more than a former player still wearing the uniform. This guy is really good, both from the psychological parts of it and from the just motivational part of it.
Richard, we've seen owners, women owners own teams, and we've seen women become assistant GMs. Do you think we'll ever see a woman as a GM?
Well, Kim Ng, who's worked for the Yankees, worked for the White Sox, and is now in the commissioner's office working baseball ops, she's interviewed for several jobs. When I was a columnist for the Houston Chronicle, I wrote, you cannot hire anyone more competent than Kim Ng. So, yes, do I think Kim will ever get a GM job? I don't know. She keeps getting interviews. Somebody's going to have the guts, because the only thing you would say is, okay, wait, there's never been a woman GM. Would she be able to relate to scouts, to players and all that? That's insulting. Kim Ng is brilliant. And, what is being a GM? It's ultimately about surrounding yourself with good people and about having a feel for the game. I can't imagine that there is a more qualified candidate than Kim. Will she ever be a GM? I don't know, but I know she's deserving.
I understand that she has done well in arbitration cases over the years. So, you would think she would be more than qualified to become a general manager.
Oh, yeah, Bill, and it's just hiring good people. It's getting at everybody, listening, being inclusive in the decision-making process, and ultimately making decisions. Kim can do that. It should not be an old boys club.
Right.
But I do understand that, like the San Antonio Spurs hiring the first woman female assistant coach in the NBA, it takes some guts, and it took somebody like Greg Popovich who is a Hall of Fame coach and a Hall of Fame executive to do that. And maybe that's what it's going to take for Kim. I mean, if I'm hiring a GM, I'm hiring Kim, but I don't own a team.
Right. I understand.
And also, you can't look at the GMs that have been hired recently, like David Stearns in Milwaukee. I mean, I can't say that, you know, these are tough calls. David Stearns is brilliant. I don't know that he's going to end up being a superstar GM. So you can't say, okay, well, Kim automatically should have gotten that job. I just think if people keep talking to Kim, there's going to be an owner that says, you know what? She's the right fit for my club, my city, and she's going to do a great job for me.
And what about broadcasters? We're seeing more and more female broadcasters. We've seen Susan Waldman, Jessica Mendez, who I think is outstanding for ESPN. What do you think about the lady broadcasters?
I've told Susan this many times, I'm completely addicted to Yankee broadcasts with John Sterling and Susan Waldman. They, to me, are the Yankees. When they're no longer there, there will be something missing from the Yankees. And the reason is they care so much. You know, Susan's been around forever working for WFAN and then on the part of the broadcast team. It's just, I don't know. I just think they are as good a broadcast team as there is. And ESPN's hiring Jessica Mendoza was a stroke of genius. And those of us who've been around her, I'm sure you've been around her at the ballpark when she's doing her homework. She's a pro. You know, and what are we talking about here, Bill? We're talking about the ability to analyze games, to reveal something about personalities. Well, that's not peculiar to particular to a gender. Its ability to be able to tell a story on the air, to engage listeners and all that, to work with your broadcasters. And she is great. But, you know, Bill, there's women that are prominent in other parts, like the Giants PA announcer, Renelle Brooks Moon.
Right.
She's become as much iconic a part of that franchise as the mascot, as Hunter Pence, as the ballpark. It feels like part of the Giants now to hear her voice at AT&T Park. And if you don't mind, I'd like to give a shout out to my friend Janet Marie Smith, who I think, and my friend Ken Nigro makes this point, Janet Marie Smith belongs in the Hall of Fame. Larry Lucchino had this idea 25 years ago to build an old ballpark, a new ballpark with old amenities to return us from stadiums to ballpark, brick and steel to fit into the urban structure. It changed the game completely. It changed every ballpark. Janet Marie was a hands-on architect there. She led the refurbishment of Dodger Stadium, of Fenway Park. She's made improvements to Camden Yards. And I just think, you know, if the Hall of Fame is for people who've had a positive impact, like a historically positive impact on the game, I mean, Janet Marie Smith belongs in the Hall of Fame. Larry Lucchino had the kernel of the idea. Everybody understands that. But Janet Marie is a giant in the game.
Another good one was Hannah Storm when she was doing baseball.
Yes.
She was great.
Yeah, and you know, the Astros had a woman president for years, Pam Gardner. Couldn't have been more professional. And we should also mention, Bill, a friend of you and I, Claire Smith.
Yes.
Claire and I ran in the same circles for years when she was at the Hartford Courant, the New York Times, and now she's an editor at ESPN. She's getting the Spink Award this summer. That's the highest award baseball media can get. You know what I always noticed about Claire? She and I covered labor together. We were on the road when I was working for the Washington Post. Claire was held in a respect. There was an affection for her, but there was a respect, both those things. And I would see her around guys like Don Baylor and the Negro brothers and Pinella and all. And no one has ever gotten the Spink Award. It's more deserving than our friend Claire Smith, and it was too long coming.
I agree with you on that. We just had her on the show earlier, so no question about it. Richard Justice, listen, thank you so much, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you, Bill.
Take care.